Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
In the 1960s and 70s, in the midst of the civil rights movement, the anti-war movement, and political upheaval in Washington, women tore off a sexually repressive mask and dared men to take them seriously. Men and women needed, she said, to rewrite their rules of engagement.
Who can come out from behind that simpering, you know, mask of ruffles that hides so much rage and impotent rage and unnecessary covert manipulativeness? And welcome the woman that can come out of that mask of ruffles and rage and be a person and be a joyous woman because she really feels like she's somebody. And then you see we'll both be able to make love, not war, and in the highest sense.
The she speaking there is feminist Betty Friedan, imagining the future after the publication of her milestone book, The Feminine Mystique, which came off the presses 50 years ago today.
She touched a nerve. She was describing, I want to call it the bubble, that many women, especially white, middle and upper middle class women, found themselves living in.
That's Marcia Ann Gillespie, the editor-in-chief of Ms. Magazine, who spoke yesterday on the program about how Friedan's message made it out of that white upper class elite and into the mainstream. Today, though, the relationship between men and women has been radically transformed by changes in the U.S. economy as much as anything, where the strictly defined roles of women are simply a luxury we can't afford anymore. Stephanie Kuntz is the director of research at the Council on Contemporary Families and the author of A Strange Stirring, The Feminine Mystique and American Women at the Dawn of the 1960s. Stephanie Kuntz, welcome to the show.
It's a pleasure to be here.
What about the relationship between men and women economically in the United States would possibly be unrecognizable to Betty Friedan looking forward 50 years?
Well, yes, I think it probably would. You know, when she wrote, there were still sex-segregated want ads, help wanted female. Ads in the New York Times were able to say things like, you must be really beautiful to be hired for this job. A woman with a college education as late as 1970 earned less than a man with a high school education, and in the 50s she earned less than a high school dropout. So these changes have been incredible, and one of the things that's really impressive is it's not just women adding more to the family income, but men have also been changing. There's been a much greater recognition that women need access to meaningful work outside the home, and men need access to a meaningful role as parents. So there's a tremendous change.
This is an interesting narrative, though, because I think there's sometimes a temptation to ascribe to economic changes a lot of deeper social and cultural changes, when sometimes that's not the case. Women joined the workforce after they got the vote in the 1920s. Then the Depression and World War II changed things around. During World War II, women entered the workforce because men were overseas actually fighting the war, and those changes didn't linger. What are the limitations of these economic transformations?
Well, that's really important, and that's why the consciousness raising that Betty Friedan did in her book and the women who followed her has been so important. You know, as you say, women were pulled into the workforce in the early 20s. In the 30s, to the extent that they had to work, they were hugely resented by society as a whole and by their husbands. Then they were pulled back in the 40s with all this great propaganda. Oh, yes, you know, you can be Rosie the Riveter. My mom was a ship fitter. She was all excited about it. And then they were just let go with nobody, really very little opposition to it. What's changed here, I think, is important, is that there really has been a change in attitude. We see, despite the recession, despite the loss of men's jobs and the increase in women who have had to support their families, we don't see any of the same resentment that we did in the Depression. On the other hand, it's absolutely true that we have not, I think individuals' consciousness have changed. But the fact is that our society, our government, and political leaders have really failed to make any accommodation to the fact that not only do women have to work, but most men and women today would prefer to share both the breadwinning and the child raising. And 70% of American kids grow up in homes where every member of the household is working outside the home in a paid job. And yet, what do we have? We've fallen so far behind all of the major industrial and even non-industrial countries in terms of family-friendly work policies that it, in fact, makes it so difficult for men and women. And I think sometimes they turn on each other. They say, why aren't you doing your share, as though somehow two people could, in fact, hold down three times jobs. Three full-time jobs without any stress.
What you're describing here is a pretty interesting dynamic where the pendulum sort of whips back and forth in the right and left rhetoric in Washington, D.C. and in the political world about roles of women, but the deeper changes in society actually are much more significant, and the political system is just not keeping up.
Absolutely. That is really it. You know, I used to say that Americans were kind of Neanderthals when it came to providing any social supports for people to raise their kids or to take care of their elders. Then I found out that the Neanderthals do a better job than we do.
So what would you recommend in terms of economic policy? I mean, obviously, more family-friendly policies that recognize this changing role of men and women. But even beyond that, in terms of continuing the consciousness raising going?
Well, there's both economic and political policies. And, of course, we do have to get rid of the remnants of the feminine mystique that still exists, that still lead women to be thought of as less competent that the minute that they become mothers and less likely to be hired, very likely to have important jobs taken away from them if they do stay on the job, and the kind of prejudices and the ways that women themselves beat themselves up feeling guilty about work, even though working women spend more time interacting with their kids than stay-at-home women did back in the 1960s. But I think the really critical thing is we have to get rid, we have to introduce the family-friendly work policies that have been introduced throughout Europe and Scandinavia and even in less developed countries. We are the only big country in the world without subsidized maternity leave so that it doesn't become a class privilege to stay home with your kids. 81 other countries have paternity leave. We don't allow people to work. If you want to work part-time, we lose our health insurance, and we're often paid less per hour for the same work than we were paid when we were working full-time. All of these things have changed in Europe. We surely should be able to catch up with them.
Possible steps forward in the future envisioned by Betty Friedan in The Feminine Mystique. Stephanie Kuntz is the director of research at the Council on Contemporary Families and the author of A Strange Stirring, The Feminine Mystique and American Women at the Dawn of the 1960s.
This is Mike Cha from Michigan. I feel overwhelmed with emails and work and meetings, but at the same time I remember my ancestors who worked in the factories, even modern-day immigrants who are working very long hours for subsistence wages, and I just feel grateful for what I have.
Men and women's roles in the workplace changing. Tell us your story at 877-8-MY-TAKE. This is The Takeaway. Stay with us.